Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we enlighten the world and our realities and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Explore with us as we examine a metaphysical montage of spiritual insights, covering everything from the mundane to the magical, UFOs to unicorns, and everything in between. This is a time of awakening, of sharing and evolving, of spreading our wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and with a little luck, some wisdom. This is Nightlight, a reminder that you are never alone.
Welcome, everybody, to Neon Twilight with your host, Solaris Blue Raven. Most of you know her from, of course, Freedom Slips Radio and then KCOR, and the fact that she has been around for a very long period of time and has managed to put her finger into so many pies and bring so much information out to you that it's amazing, and she has kindly joined Nightlight Radio once a month so that she can bring her wisdom and her insight and her knowledge and her experience to this audience, as well as the other audiences that she has been serving for a very, very long time. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Solaris. Welcome to your show.
Well, thank you, Barbara. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for that beautiful introduction as well. And yeah, I look forward to our show each month. It's fabulous with Neon Twilight.
Well, you know, it's been interesting because it's taken on a different flavor from the other shows that you do. And so it really is kind of cool that, you know, most of your other shows and mine, actually, are all interview shows, basically, or roundtables where a topic is discussed. And Neon Twilight has a different flavor to it, and I love the way that you have really molded it so that it does serve a different purpose, a different audience.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's interesting how that sort of just morphed into its own design work, and, of course, I think you've been awesome as my, I guess you can call him a co-host on here, discussing all these wonderful topics. So it's been really, really fun. And I agree. I've had a good time with this information. I hope your listeners do as well.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, for both of us, we're hitting material that we're aware of, but we haven't really discussed at great length, really, unless, of course, an author has written a book about it. And of course, much has been written about Atlantis for sure. And yet, to go back to, I think, one of the most reliable sources, which would be Manly P. Hall, and you know, take his information. Yeah, I mean, and the book that we're going into is The Secret Teachings of All Ages by Manly P. Hall. You want to maybe kind of explain a little bit about who he was and you know, the book that we're going to be using?
Well, how do I describe him? You know, it's interesting. I don't know if this is more your area or not when it comes down to Manly P. Hall's work, but, you know, the way I just see him is a visionary. You know, I don't want to give it a generic description. I see him more when I researched his book and started looking into even the secret teachings of the ages. This is information based on so many different philosophies, mysticism, occultism, spirituality. He covers so many different areas, and in my opinion, has been one of the one of these path cutters. And so far as the path to our own level of consciousness and mystical alchemy, I looked at, I think we might have had this discussion before, but the Masons thought highly of him. And for some reason or another, I thought he was part of the Masonic teachings, but apparently he wasn't. He was, but his work was studied for many, very, very long time. So when I look at him, I don't like to put a specific label on his work because it seems very nebulous to me. And you might be able to do a better description than I am. But for me, I find that his topics are fascinating, and I find that also people will find something in each, once again, in each chapter or in each on each subject, they'll find something that they resonate with that takes them to a whole different level of their own spirituality. It's almost as if it's been written in code, once again, and I don't know if you get that or not, but for me, it seems like he, everybody seems to write in a different level of, it's almost like a sequencing of something on a cosmic scale.
Oh, yeah, and, for those, this is from the back of his book. He was born in 1901 and he died in 1990. So he is an older generation, and they describe him as a widely regarded as a sage and teacher steeped in the wisdom of antiquity, as one of the leading esoteric scholars of the 20th century, and he founded the Philosophical Research Society in Los Angeles in 1934. And they continue to publish his books and pursue his educational mission. He literally, the book is a huge book. It's not for the faint of heart, for sure. But he's written on just about every topic you can imagine, and some that you didn't expect to find in a book like this. I mean, as I recall, when I leafed through one of my copies of it a long time ago, there was a whole thing about, who wrote Shakespeare, Shakespeare or Bacon. I mean, it's like he took everything that even had a little bit of a hint, a sprinkle of esoteric information, and it's in this book. And it's really quite amazing because he puts out what information is out there. He gives you source material. And he doesn't give you any opinions, his own, at least that I've noticed. He's just presenting the facts, just the facts, kind of like Joe Friday, and leaves it up to you to take it to whatever level of consciousness you've got and apply it to your life or not. But I challenge anybody, my sister who speed reads, read all the way through it, in like an afternoon and an evening. And, I've often said speed reading to me is no way to enjoy a book. And I don't know that she retained any or, anything that she actually read. But I find that the way we're going to be doing it in taking it in short little chapterettes, so to speak, it's going to be a great way to share the information, because even though I've been in the field for a long time and so have you, there was information here that I kind of vaguely remember, but it was very interesting for me to go back and just renew my familiarity with Atlantis especially. I don't know, how do you feel about it? I mean, you picked tonight's chapters, so...
I did. Well, I'm very drawn to Atlantis for various reasons, but I do like the topic of Atlantis, and I like what he's describing insofar as his information. And you're right, he leaves it to the reader to kind of decode and absorb as they're guided to do so. And the last time I really read Manly P. Hall was a long, long time ago, quite honestly. So I had to order the book again because it disappeared and vanished, and of course I've been going through it again. So, but this is a chapter that stands out, in my opinion, the Atlantis and the Gods of Antiquity. And as I was mentioning to you prior to the show, I've got the Secret Teachings of All Ages, Unabridged 1928 Illustrated Edition, and it has a Manly P. Hall's picture on the top, or in the front, excuse me. So that's, I think people would really enjoy this work, but it is something that you can't, in my opinion, you can't speed read this. I just don't think so. I mean, I can talk fast, but
no.
My point is that you have to absorb it. And with me, I like to read things, and sometimes my mind works very fast, so I'll highlight certain things that I find have a certain resonance with me. I'm sure most people can relate to that, but that's definitely something I do. So, yeah.
Well, it's kind of, you know, if someone is on a spiritual journey and they're just starting in, there are a couple of books, like Science of Mind is a very good book to have as a reference. The Secret Teachings of All Ages by Manly P. Hall, another good one, certainly a good Bible. There are a number of books that should be in the beginner's library. Holy Blood, Holy Braille, The Spear of Destiny. Yep. There are lots of, there are tons of really, really good books. But if you're just beginning, if you're starting out in the field, if you want to get a spiritual background, not necessarily a psychic background, but a spiritual background, those are the kind of books that I would recommend that you kind of read and refer back to from time to time, because it's good to have a beginner's library. Everybody's going to find directions that they go in. I know I have. I know there are certain areas that I'm just fascinated up the wazoo over, and then others that just don't call to me at this particular point in time. Doesn't mean they won't at some time, but these are the books that to have as a good reference to be able to sort of go back and get a little bit of knowledge. And what I love about the Secret Teachings is that, his chapters aren't incredibly long. He gives you just enough information to kind of tickle your taste buds. And, if it's an area that on a consciousness level you're drawn to, you will then be forced to go and find other books. And Amazon is a great source. But this is definitely a book that, while it's not a fun read, it's not a novel type reading. It is definitely an informational foundational. I think it's a great foundational book, and certainly. I was just trying to think of who's written. I've read a ton of books on Atlantis, as have you, I think.
I have. I was always reading books on Atlantis back in the day, yeah.
And I was trying to think of, why is it that when you are searching suddenly for a title that you can't pull it up immediately? there is one book that I've read that is absolutely, I think, the... it's a book on Atlantis. It was, son of a gun. I found it. It's called Edgar Casey's Atlantis, and it is, it's a phenomenal book, and I think it was written by, Greg Little. It is the best book on Atlantis that I've ever read. And it's an easy good read, but they're all good. And the cool thing is that the actual material that talks about Atlantis, Plato did it, and that goes back thousands of years. So that Atlantis is either a reality, or it is a symbol reflecting a part of humanity's climb towards ascension, and it's magical, actually, but to have actual proof of it, to be able to point on the map like you can Troy and all of the other mythical places, they basically in the Garden of Eden. Even it's not a place where you can say, "Yep, that's exactly where it was," because they've got it. They've got Atlantis, pinpointed all over the map.
Oh yeah, no, it seems like it's more in the ether field now, anyways. But also, in my opinion, it's in the in our cells and atoms and consciousness. It's just part of the archives of the cosmos, for what it's worth, however you want to define it. At least that's the way I'm seeing it these days.
Well, yeah, I like the way you put that. I would tend to agree with you. I have recently been looking into the Shining Ones, and and the fact that they were a species slash culture that was here before, you know, maybe 40, 50, maybe 100,000 years ago, and that a lot of our myths that are referring to gods and goddesses and stuff like that are actually referring to the Shining Ones, and that they did intermarry with the indigenous peoples. And so in all of our DNA, there is memory of, I believe, what Atlantis was, and I don't think it was anything that is out there to this day. You know, fragments of it, yes, but you know, because we don't have all the pieces, we make up the story, and I think that's what's happened with so many of these books, that mm-hmm. because there is no real scientific evidence, this is where all of the myths come in, but at the core of every myth is the seed of absolute truth. So,
mm-hmm.
And Plato got his information from Solon. He was
Solon?
An Egyptian. Yeah, Solon. And mm-hmm. he was telling a story of thousands of years before that. So that, you know, the date of Atlantis is really vague and out there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, timelessness still the whole scene. Yeah.
Well, let's give them kind of basically a little bit of an explanation of what Plato said Atlantis was.
I'm going to leave that to you, Barbara.
Okay. Well, he talks about an area that was beyond the Pillars of Hercules, which is Gibraltar. And he describes it as either a collection of islands or, and he goes back to way, you know, to the, at the time of creation when the earth was founded, and so Atlantis was a portion of the world that was given to Neptune, and he in turn set it up as a kingdom. And And then after a period of time, it was divided into, I believe Neptune had five sets of boys, of twins. And Atlantis was divided into sections for each of them. They each became a king of their own section of Atlantis. It was a huge island, I guess, or groups of islands. And it was divided amongst the children equally, and they all had made a pact that they would support one another. Nobody would kill each other, and that if in time of some war, they would all, you know, go into battle together. And it was a thriving society. And when they talk about the construction of it, you know, silver and gold and a mineral that I struggled to pronounce. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Are you reading from the pages? Because I was looking at the book and I wasn't certain if you were going through the what was written in the Gods of Antiquity or not. So are you focusing the book itself or no?
Well, I was going a little bit on both, but
okay.
They talk about the fact that. The buildings were covered with brass and with tin and with gold and silver, and I can't pronounce it's. I struggled with this today.
What page is it on?
That the mineral. I'm on page 81 actually. It's O R I C H A L C H. Orchalot.
Okay, I'm on a. Yeah, I'd have to look it up. And actually, I'm on a different page than you from a different book. So that's probably what's causing a little confusion there. Okay.
But it's a mineral that they said was next to gold, the mineral that was most treasured. And I've never heard of it. So it's...
How do you spell it again, please?
O-R-I-C-H-A-L-C-H.
Okay.
Or
Aurealic? Aurealic?
That sounds good.
Aurealic?
Yeah, it's a mineral that I am not familiar with at all, and I'm very into precious metals, especially.
Mm-hmm.
But it just it's amazing how elaborate that they go into their description of the fact that the Atlantic Ocean was named after Atlantis, and Atlas was one of the sons of I think Poseidon, so that you know you're going way, 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 way back, and they talk about Plato almost describes it as though it was like a Garden of Eden, and in Plato's works, I don't know if it's in Plato's works or not, because I was reading up on it at one point in time, and I was reading this. Timorous and the Sidious or whatever. Latin words just don't roll off my tongue as I like them to. And he, in many ways, some of the fables say that Atlantis became so powerful that it started to attack other colonies. Troy Troy and Sparta, and it actually was the Trojans that overthrew Atlantis at one point in time. This is not in this book, by the way. And so that they became corrupt, and I had read somewhere that Atlantis was sunk by the gods, but in this book, and according to Plato, it was earthquakes and volcanoes that took it down,
mm-hmm.
and that at one time it sank. It sank where it was, which meant that nobody could go sailing out the Straits of Gibraltar because it was so muddy. It was because of Atlantis sinking that ships weren't able to go in and out for thousands of years or whatever until the water rose higher or whatever. So, so basically, in looking at what Atlantis stood for, the more I read, the more I got the feeling that it was meant to be a symbol of consciousness as opposed to a real place. I don't know if you got the same feeling I did.
Well, I find it to be more of a place that's, I want to call it like more ether, more ethereal in the sense of the way it was designed. I see it more as more of a light language or a light being, like our essence of origin insofar as who we really are as cosmic beings integrated onto a world. But, when you look into what they're trying to look at here when they're writing about these initial Atlantis, it seems to me like they're just trying to relate it to the people of the timeline, which would mean that it would be more, the description is more physical in the sense people can relate to it. So that's what I look at it like back in the day, were they trying to write to accommodate the masses back then and the people and their belief systems versus a very advanced type of celestial technology and civilization. And also what I look at when I'm talking about like celestial bodies and the gods reference, like for example, the planets were referenced as gods back in the day. I mean, in a sense of living intelligence, living beings. So that's something to factor in as well. If you're looking at planetary systems and even the idea behind Atlantis, I mean, we could even take it to that level. I mean, this is obvious, more nebulous, but the idea behind it being something more planetary, more like another body, like a celestial body, such as the planets were described as the gods, like Neptune and such.
And Venus, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's just...
So that's just something I look at.
I agree with you. And it just, to me, I mean, it's a wonderful tale, the way... I don't think Plato wrote fairy tales, and yet it feels like that Atlantis was a fairy tale.
Or was it misrepresented over decades and decades and centuries and centuries? That's another aspect, too.
Well, yeah. Exactly. And it's similar to the Bible in that a story was woven together to explain something that they had no physical information on.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't...
It's written in code, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, with a lot of the ancient cities, you know, there are artifacts that have been dug up that you know, point to the fact that, you know, made in Troy and made in Rome, you know, but there's nothing that says made in Atlantis. And so the more I look into it, the more I mean, come on, we just did Toth and basically Toth talked about being growing up on Atlantis, and, you know, much as I believe there was a Trismegistus, you know, for sure, I believe Toth existed. I'm not so sure I buy the, and according to the Emerald Tablet material, the people of Atlantis misused their powers, and because of that, the gods sank the island and, you know, took it out of existence, and before it went underground, Toth took his followers and went to Egypt to, you know, start to, you know, bring them into a higher level of awareness and understanding. So that
mm-hmm.
that's the only other place in ancient writings that I have heard reference to Atlantis. You know, any other Atlantis
mm-hmm.
material has been very, very current, you know, 19th, 20th, well, Blavatsky talked about it, but there's no, Sumerians didn't talk about it. The Egyptians vaguely talked about it, but not really. So
mm-hmm.
so it's kind of like there's, aside from Plato, I don't recall. Was there one other place where in antiquity the mention of Atlantis was?
In this particular chapter, are you talking about the Atlantis and the gods
yeah.
of antiquity, or? Well,
yeah.
I can read it. I mean, if you want me to read through here, we can kind of go through that and certainly address it. But I agree with you in a sense, before we get started, that I find it to be more ethereal in a sense, but also that I do believe there was an advanced celestial civilization. Now, whether it was actually physically on this world or in a different field of energy, which is a different configuration is my take, I do say that. In a sense, that's my gnosis. I feel like that's definitely, yes. But what they're describing in this whole, this type of a formula they've created, I find it's designed to accommodate the people of the timeline. At least that's what it looks like. So, but if you want, I can read a few, we can go through a few paragraphs
here and
there.
Why don't we do that? Because that gives
that
people
way,
an idea.
Yeah, we're going in and out of different things, but just to give everybody an idea of the template itself, of the book itself, which is Atlantis and the Gods of Antiquity, and I could just read a few chapters, and I won't bore you all to tears, but we'll just go through a few things here. So I'm going to start in the beginning, and hopefully, Barbara, you have the same kind of data on your page, even though I'm on a different page with a particular book, but it's the Atlantis. We'll see how this works, right? But the Atlantis
okay.
is the subject of a short but important article appearing in the annual report of the Board of Regents of the Smithsonian Institution for the year ending June 30th, 1915, the author, M. Pierre Termier, a member of the Academy of Sciences and Director of Service of the Geologic Chart of France, 1912, delivered a lecture on the Atlantean hypothesis before the Institute Oceanographic. It is the translated notes of this remarkable lecture that are published in the Smithsonian Report. And that's what this is referring to here. So if you if y'all are ready, I'll just go ahead and start.
Sure.
Okay. Do you see that on your page?
Oh, yeah, I gotcha.
Okay, very good. Okay, so after a long period of disdainful indifference, writes M. Timir, observe how in the last few years science is returning to the study of Atlantis. How many naturalists, geologists, zoologists, or botanists are asking one another today whether Plato has not transmitted to us with slight amplification a page from the actual history of mankind? No affirmation is yet permissible, but it seems more and more evident that a vast region, continental or made up of greater islands, has collapsed west of the Pillars of Hercules, otherwise called the Strait of Gibraltar, and that its collapse occurred in the not far distant past. In any event, the question of Atlantis is placed anew before men of science, and since I do not believe that it can ever be solved without the aid of oceanography, I have thought it natural to discuss it here in this temple of maritime science and to call to such a problem long scorned but now being revived, the attention of oceanographers as well as the attention of those who, through immersed in the tumult of cities, lend an ear to the distant murmur of the sea. In his lecture, M. Tenier, I hope I pronounced his last name right, presents theologic, geographic, and zoologic data in the substantiation of the Atlantis theory, figuratively draining the entire bed of the Atlantic Ocean. He considers the inequalities of its basin and cites locations on a line from the Azores to Iceland, where dredging has brought lava to the surface from a depth of 3,000 meters. The volcanic nature of the islands now existing in the Atlantic Ocean corroborates Plato's statement that the Atlantean continent was destroyed by volcanic cataclysms. And M. Tenier also advances the conclusions of a young French zoologist, M. Louis Germain, who admitted the existence of an Atlantic continent connected with the Iberian Peninsula within Mauritania and prolonged toward the south so as to include some regions of desert climate. M. Tenier concludes his lecture with a graphic picture of the engulfment of that continent and the description of the Atlantean civilization given by Plato in the Critias may be summarized as follows. In the first ages, the gods divided the earth among themselves, proportioning it according to their respective dignities. Each became the peculiar deity of his own allotment and established therein temples to himself, ordained a priestcraft, and instituted a system of sacrifice. To Poseidon was given the sea and the island continent of Atlantis. In the midst of the island was a mountain which was the dwelling place of three earthborn primitive human beings, Evanor, his wife, Leucippe, I guess that's how you say it, and their only daughter, Clado. The maiden was very beautiful, and after the sudden death of her parents, she was wooed by Poseidon, who begat by her five pairs of male children. Poseidon apportioned his continents among them, these ten, and Atlas the eldest, he made overlord of the other nine. Poseidon further called the country Atlantis and the surrounding sea the Atlantic in honor of Atlas. Before the birth of his ten sons, Poseidon divided the continent and the coastwise sea into concentric zones of land and water, which were as perfect as though turned upon a lathe. Two zones of land and three of water surrounded the central island, which Poseidon caused to be irrigated with two springs of water, one warm and the other cold. The descendants of Atlas continued as rulers of Atlantis and with wise governments and industry. Excuse me while I turn the page because I'm reading from a very big book. elevated the country to a position of surpassing dignity. The natural resources of Atlantis were apparently limitless. Precious metals were mined, wild animals domesticated, and perfumes distilled from its fragrant flowers. While enjoying the abundance natural to their semitropic location, the Atlanteans employed themselves also in the erection of palaces, temples, and docks. They bridged the zones of sea and later dug a deep canal to connect the outer ocean with the central island, where stood the palaces and Temple of Poseidon, which excelled all other structures in magnificence. A network of bridges and canals were created by Atlanteans to unite the various parts of their kingdoms. I'm just going to stop here for a second, but you know, when I'm reading this, it feels like mythology to me to some degree. And yeah. I don't know how you're digesting, but that's what it seems like. And remember, I was talking about the planetary systems and the celestial bodies and how they were treated as, you know, they're considered to be gods. This is what this reminds me of. So, yeah, I think you have some good points you're making. And I'm not sure how we can go into other levels of it. I don't want to bore everybody, but I just want to give an idea of what this book is communicating and how it's representing itself through their own description.
Yeah, I think most people, of course, I'm probably older than most of you out there, but there was a time in high school where we went into the Roman gods and the Greek gods and the Norse gods and all of the different and so there is a background in mythology, and you're absolutely right, and it's just sort of like it feels almost like the Bible and how it was written, that this mythology, that this story was put together to explain a culture that may have had greater insight and wisdom and ability. And then, there are many, many stories about how survivors of Atlantis settled in different places, and they're the ones that built the pyramids because, and then... you take it even further, and you know, this is where the Rh negative factor came from that science can't explain, because that was the survivors of Atlantis, and that's how their bloodline has come down through the generations. But it does feel like it's a wonderful story that is made to explain stuff that nobody else can explain.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And there's something that, yeah, no, go ahead.
Well, I go back to the fact that we found archaeological evidence of so many different things that to not have anything that we could point to and say, yes, indeed, this came from Atlantis. This is something that was indigenous to Atlantis. There's nothing, and I mean, you can go back, look at even the glyphs that they found in the Bosnian pyramids that go back 40,000 years. And theoretically, Atlantis was within that time frame, and yet this is the only evidence we have that it existed. So it had to have been, the story had to have been created for a reason. It isn't just, you know, mm-hmm. some old man, you know, writing a fairy tale for his grandchildren or something.
Right.
It stood the test of time. So if it stood the test of time, it has to resonate to the distant memories we all carry within us. So there has to be a truth or a wisdom or a point.
Mm-hmm.
To
I
the
agree.
Whole story.
Yeah, it's almost like, yeah, you're right. It's like a metaphor almost for a lot of different events that have taken place, almost like an Akashic of some kind. And I agree in a sense. I mean, we all have this correlation as spiritual beings or cosmic beings, whatever you want to call us. We certainly resonate on a psychic subliminal level with pyramids and structures and geometrics and cosmic design. So something like this story, which I don't know about you, and I'm pretty sure, I mean, for me, Atlantis really rings. The frequency rings. I've had regression years and years in the 90s done on Atlantis, and I got a lot of good data. So it wasn't anything like what Plato described. And that's my point. So it is what it is. But when I see this description, like I said, I think it is a metaphor for other things. And I think it's a sequencing to connect us and maybe even interconnect us onto the real civilizations before mankind really showed up on the map. I mean, it's almost like the Halls of Amenti. We're going to another field of energy where it's going to be hard to find anything tangible. And then, of course, if you look at the ancient artifacts, which have been confiscated over how many decades and centuries, well, we might have some remnants of Atlantis, but we may not have seen it as you know, the people on ground level. It could be other types who have access to that.
Yeah, and I think that the important things that came from Atlantis or the concept of it, it was wisdom teaching, and again, it may be that it is tying us into another level of consciousness, because, I mean, nowhere in here did I read anything about crystals, about flying machines, about,
right.
You know, any of the stuff that I've seen in other books about Atlantis. And so it is talking about a high level of civilization. And that, to me, Atlantis could even represent the consciousness.
Mm-hmm. And the misuse of, because it is about power and control insofar as misusing technology or even power, psychic power, whatever that may get, whatever gifts people have. But, yeah, definitely about control, in my opinion. But it is interesting how, and I guess it has a lot to do with the beings who incarnate. You know, you're looking at different people uh-huh. who are writing different information based on whether it's their cellular memory or their state of consciousness, where they come from. And maybe they had more access to the data than the people that wrote back then. I'm not saying Plato didn't have access, but it is very interesting to me, and a lot of the data that he writes about, I don't really feel energetically connected to it, but I do feel energetically connected to the word Atlantis, and when I look at it on a higher level, I see that, and I see the technology, I see the crystalline types of, you know, types of devices and things that they were capable of doing through their own technologies, so, and that's where we're at today, even behind the scenes.
Well, yeah, and you know, when you think about Even the mythology of the Romans and the Greeks and their, you know, the gods in the sky and everything. I mean, it that came after Atlantis. When you're thinking about where they're putting Atlantis in a time frame, they're putting it back, I think, a lot further than even these guys of the 18th and 19th century put it, because if they're talking about there, Solon spoke of having a priest, an Egyptian priest, taking him into a long chamber that had a chronology, a statue of all of the priests and the priesthoods who had served, and it went back thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And then when the chronology stopped, he asked the priest, you know, well, who was here before then? And the answer was, that's when the gods lived among us. So so that took that takes you way far back. And I'm beginning to think that again, this is very much like the Bible. That there's truth to it, but the truth has been lost in the telling of the story.
I agree.
It's like that old, the telephone game, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody whispers to somebody else. And
right.
By the time
yep.
you get through
yep.
10,000 or 50,000 years, the message is lost.
And that's why I like the idea behind working with a cosmic design and higher self over soul and bringing in the data from the full Akashic, whatever you want to call it, universal Akashic, because in my opinion, we already have access to real information. And just by doing our own remote accessing, we could probably come up with more data, more clarity versus what they've been doing, because there is an agenda behind a lot of this. In my opinion, when you know we talk about biblical information, et cetera, it's still going to be about controlling or obfuscation or keeping something hidden so there's not too much power or evolution, you know, associated, in my opinion anyway. So I find that this is kind of misleading in a sense, and that is what I've been noticing. And I guess that's why when I read these books, I highlight certain things that resonate, because most of the time I'll see something that really doesn't, but then something will pop out.
Well, yeah, and again, it's sort of like, you know, they're talking about, there's talk of, you know, the Ark of the Covenant and all of the stuff that was taken from Solomon's temple and hidden, and the reality is that there probably are treasures, but I believe it's wisdom. It isn't a physical, it isn't something of a physical nature. I mean, let's face it,
mm-hmm.
if it was gold, it was melted long ago, but the wisdom, the texts, and when you stop to think about it, when you're talking about that long ago, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years, what was considered treasure then does not necessarily constitute treasure now.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
So
it seems to me like the real treasure is enlightenment, is wisdom.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I'll go along with you on that one for sure. And, you
mm-hmm.
know, when you look at all of the information that's on there about this, that's here and everywhere on Atlantis, I mean, there was a time I thought Atlantis was a mothership that, you know, got a flat tire and landed in the middle of the ocean and
mm-hmm.
terraformed its surface and sent out people to see if they could find a flat tire or a garage. And so for thousands of years, they lived on the surface on their terraformed mothership. And when they actually did find the pieces they need or found whatever it was they needed to fix their spaceship, it took off in an explosion, so to speak, and they stranded some of their people here, but they went home. So
mm-hmm.
the reason you can't find Atlantis is because it was never actually a part of our physical reality.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, either it phased into another dimension or
mm-hmm.
or whatever. Or maybe there was an overlap of worlds and times. But
right, yeah. I see that, too, like in a sense of a different space-time configuration.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it all takes is a tweak. And it's a different space-time, different planetary systems. Everything is changed, you know. So I don't think your description is too far out, actually.
Yeah,
it certainly has a resonance effect with me. I find that, yeah, could be highly possible in a sense.
Well, you know,
when
a culture or whatever gets stranded, they eventually are are assimilated into whatever the indigenous peoples are, you know, and there is a blending of cultures. But, and that could explain, you know, a lot about the pyramids and stuff like that, where it was a generation that was able to produce stuff like that, but then after the generations passed, you know, passed on, the technique and the ability to do that stuff was lost. And so, you know, it became something that future generations used but couldn't replicate.
Right. Well, that sounds like a lot of today's work, too. I mean, you look at even something like the computer systems and iPhones and this and that. I mean, who knows how many people can actually put one together and understand how to fix one or repair one, or say they lost access to the manufacturing. Seriously, I mean, when you look at it, think about that as well. And, you know, that's why I say learn how things work if you can. Try to figure things out as best you can when it comes to whether it's technological or spiritual.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was funny because after I moved here, there was an EMP surge and I lost my computer for almost a week. I had no internet. Mm-hmm. And I was really lost. It was like, you know, where I would, you know, normally go to the computer and look something up. I couldn't do that. And because of the pandemic, the libraries weren't available. And so it was like you suddenly felt cut off from the world, even though you weren't. You know, there were still telephones.
Mm-hmm.
No, there wasn't telephone. I lost all of that. So, But it does make you cognizant of the fact that we depend upon this technology so tremendously, and an EMP surge is not out of the possibility of reality. So you know, have backups, have good books and batteries.
Right, and also using your mind and your brain and just the mechanics of, you know, understanding, you know, common sense, because I think people are going to have to rely on that again at some point. And that psychic energy, I mean, we've talked about that before, but the idea behind interfacing with the universe, with the cosmos, I mean, you can do that without having to use an internet. I mean, the real web is the multiverse, in my opinion, where you can just go in there and find information. We're streaming consciousness all the time. So I think people have forgotten about that a little bit with this distraction, and hopefully they'll kind of recalibrate.
Well, I would totally agree with you on that. I think that there is a generation here that so relies on the handhelds that if they had to look something up, there are some YouTubes of teenagers being given a dial telephone and not being able to figure out how to make it work.
That's so funny.
I mean, it's terrible.
What about microfiche?
So, you know,
remember back in the day? I mean, you know.
Oh, geez. Oh, my goodness.
I used to use them. I guess they still use them. That's what I used to use a lot. So.
Well, yeah, that's, you know. I've often wondered, where is the cloud that everything is stored in? You know, is it really a cloud, or is it?
I'm going to say it's a fusion center, isn't it? I'm not certain.
I would calibrate it
to something like that.
I have no idea. But you know, it will bring humanity to its knees if we lose the internet and all of the electronics that we've got now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It will be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say one. You know, the thing is about the cloud, for example, is they're just bringing in all kinds of data, whether it's good or bad. They don't care. They're just compiling information. And a lot of it's probably not accurate. And I find that, you know, when you store information that's not good, it's bad data, then what's the point? And having a big library of false data, right? And I find that I think that this is going to be happening more and more. We have to use discernment on the internet, for example. But in these big areas where they're putting everything on the cloud, I mean, you access those things later on, you're going to say, what is all this garbage? I mean, probably most of it's trash, stuff we wouldn't even use, my point. So, and then you look at back in the day with like what we're describing here with the secret teachings and you know, well, it could be a fantasy. It could be a drug, some kind of drug he was on. It could have been a lot of different things that created this. I'm not saying it was. I'm just saying we really don't know what was in his head at the time that inspired him to really write about this and what caused that.
Well, he was a philosopher. And
mm-hmm.
and I the more I look at, you know, who he was as a person And what he was famous for was philosophy, was, you know, understanding the concepts of human beings and the philosophical understanding of how society evolved and grew, and what better way to do it than in an allegory.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the more I look at it, the more it reads as a celestial blueprint, though it reads like I'm looking at Neptune, I'm looking at the planets when he's describing everything. I'm not looking at here. I'm not looking at our oceans here. I'm looking at off planet.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the more you and I talk, the more I begin to think that Atlantis was meant to represent something other than what everybody has taken it to be. And how common a thing for humanity to take a story at its word value instead of looking into what it was really meant to represent.
I agree. And I think the reason that the Masons were attracted to his work, Manly P. Hall, is because it does leave that room for play. It, you know, you can look at it as a metaphor, you can create ritual around it, you can decode it on a level of spirituality or consciousness, and even play with it in the sense of seeing what you can do with the information in a ceremony where what would open up energetically for them to see more about it. And I find that maybe that was one of the reasons they were so attracted to his work as well.
Could be. You almost kind of would like to be able to have dinner with Plato and say, you know, so what did Atlantis stand for?
I have to ask you one question. If you could have dinner with anybody in history, in the illusion of history, who would you have dinner with? Who would you like to talk to?
Oh, wow. I would. Oh, geez, that's such a good question. I guess I would. Well, I would like to talk with Jesus. I would like to talk with Hermes Trismegistus. I would love to talk with anybody. God. I'd like to talk with God. I have some real big questions for God. Not so much public figures as historical figures. And just find out what really they intended their teachings to represent.
Mm-hmm.
How about you? Who would you have dinner with?
I think you should write a book on questions for God. I see a book coming. Not to divert. I would love to talk to Nikola Tesla. I love Nikola Tesla, and I would like to have been able to talk to him. And Jesus, I could go with that as well. Hermes. I could go with a lot of the people you mentioned or the beings. I think those are the main ones. I love the inventors and the scientists. But for me, I'd really love to talk to Nikola Tesla. I think he was my favorite out of the scientists. I mean, I know everybody has a lot of information on him, but to sit and understand, there's so much about him that was so complex, and he seemed so much like a walk-in. I find that, and to my opinion, you know, this is what Atlantis is. It's that kind of a technology that is capable of creating great strengths and great evolution or destroying everything.
Mm-hmm. I think he was one of those prophets that come into a time frame to give the people tools to increase their understanding and comprehension of the world they live in. I mean, the Buddha and Jesus and Krishna, all of those guys, were here to give messages to humanity. And I think Tesla was as well. And having dinner with him would have been a kick because he was really strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I heard. I don't know if he cared for women much, but you know.
He liked birds.
Conversation. That's always good. But yeah, you know, and I know we have a lot of information within our own, like I said, our own DNA, we can access information, but it's nice to be able to sit at the table, a table like that, and just communicate and have real conversations with those who walk before us. And, of course, they're still moving on in their own universes at this point.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I do believe they're here on this planet as well. There are what I would call prophets that are mm-hmm. that are here today, and how frustrating it must be to try to get a message out there. It's sort of like publishing an encyclopedia for a population that can't read yet.
Mm-hmm. Right. I guess that's why there's telepathy.
Yeah.
Show them with pictures, show them with glyphs or symbols, or, you know, a lot of people are telepathic, and I think that's a good way to communicate if you understand the language.
I think
you know,
that...
Did you see... Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you. But did you see the scheme? I don't know if you get the pictures that I get in this book, where it has the scheme of the universe according to the Greeks and Romans. Do you see that picture?
No, I don't have that in my book.
Oh, okay. Well, the reason I'm looking at it is because it's interesting, because, and I just wanted to, if you have something to add, go ahead and add. I just want to mention something after it.
No, I just, the more I think about it, the more I realize that the prophets that are out there today are not the people we who are claiming to be prophets. That's what gets you. A prophet doesn't claim to be a prophet. If they do, you know, it's what those that speak don't know, and those who know don't speak. So real prophets are out there trying to put a message out there, trying to seed the consciousness of humanity in a subtle way, because they don't want to be labeled a prophet and then have people create a religion around them, because that's what usually happens.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, they warn you of the false prophets. I think Jesus even mentioned that. But, you know, there are a lot of people out there, in my opinion, that are giving the wrong message. Maybe it's not done on purpose, just because they just don't have the correct data. And I do find that we've talked about how channels can definitely get a bad read, in a sense of not understanding what they're interfacing with, and then bringing in more data that's not, it's corrupted, basically. That's why I always go with higher self, lower self, super conscious and creator source, or clarity, as best clarity as I can, because I don't want to get all that entanglement and all the strange connected to scattered data. And even this stuff, I look at it from a distance. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, you also don't want to talk to the ego of the person that's giving out the information. You want a clear source,
right?
And that's hard to do. You know, you channel, I channel. There's always a little bit of us in whatever we channel, because they're using our vocabulary and our experience to mm-hmm. create the message that's trying to go across, and so. It's quite impossible to get a pure message, but it's possible to get a very clear message.
Right. And that's why I think that the host, or whatever you want to call the being itself that's seeking for the answers, I think it's within, and that they go with their own pure source of energy, their pure light, pure state of consciousness, and the data will come in accordingly. You know, it's good to have, like we use for sounding boards. You know, we use each other for sounding boards, I know, and I'm sure you've done that with clients and such, but it's really just a confirmation a lot of levels, or help them, you know, just kind of shine some light on areas. But I think the keys and the codes are within. And I find that if most people who are seekers really find that, they figure that out eventually, that they are the source in co-creation with the universe and our creator.
Yeah, I recently did an interview with Rabbi Wayne Dossick, and he's written a book called Radical Loving. Fabulous book. Mm-hmm. Fabulous, fabulous book. And he tells a story about a synagogue. It could either be a synagogue or a church. You know, it doesn't matter. But it was an organization that was very successful and very bountiful. And suddenly they started to lose, you know, parishioners or whoever that was coming. And the person in charge went to a prophet and said, you know, we're doing the same thing we've always done, and suddenly we're losing all of our flock, you know. And the prophet said, well, you know, it's strange that that's happening, because the Messiah happens to be a member of your group. And so this man went back to his group and told everybody. He said, you know, one of us is the Messiah, and he didn't tell me who. And so so from then on, everyone treated everyone else as though they were the Messiah, and the love and the cooperation that started to generate from that drew people back to the organization. And the reality is, and the reality is, if we behave that way, if we understand the fact that we are all the Messiah, life mm-hmm. becomes a better place to live.
Absolutely.
I agree with you. I think that there is so much going on, especially today. Everybody's mm-hmm. looking for the truth, but the reality is everybody has that spark of the infinite within them, and that's where all the wisdom truly lies. And to have to go to another person for it is only to get something channeled through their consciousness, as opposed to going to the true source that's inside of you.
Right. I think part of that is these people need to be plugged in, you know, as far as plugging into their own consciousness, however they do that. And that's part of it. You know, they're just kind of disconnected, whether it's by choice or something else going on. But, yeah, I think that idea behind we are all, the higher self is the Godhead. So we are all ascended masters when we choose to be. That's that same blend of energy where we are all that love. And if we treat each other as an ascended being, if we have that unity, then certainly could raise the consciousness of the world. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no,
but, you know, that's like pulling
teeth
these days. You know, the spiking and polarization that goes on, and, you know, it is what it is, but, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to put either of us out of business. Yes, we do, but that's all right. There's still good stuff there.
And then, go ahead.
I think that you know, we've hit an hour, and I really want to go into the myths of the dying God, because that to me was another aha moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's not that I didn't know it, but I found it fascinating that what has been recorded in the Bible as the story of Jesus is really the repeating of many stories that are thousands of years older
mm-hmm.
than what became the foundation of the Christianity and Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating because the traditions and the stories and the myths are all out there. It's just a matter of let's see, they go back to the Tammuz and the Ishtar story, which is 4,000 mm-hmm. years B.C., which is 6,000 years ago. And
mm-hmm.
and the story is you know, basically it's talking about gods that die and are resurrected, and it's the stories are so similar to that of Jesus that it
mm-hmm.
makes one pause and wonder if the people who actually wrote the story, and I'm not saying Jesus didn't exist because I believe he did, but in the writing of it, in the creating of the story that became Christianity, did they borrow from these myths that were thousands of years old and weave them into a story that
mm-hmm.
was able to support the personage of Jesus to create a foundation for a religious organization?
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that's exactly what they did. And it seems like that, once again, we're dealing with the metaphors again, the symbolism, even with Isis, Osiris, and the whole idea behind that resurrection, and a lot of other things connected to Jesus. But, yeah, it's not just those few stories with Ishtar and this and that. I mean, there's all kinds of stories connected into that, which, in my opinion, is there's certainly a similar thread in the fabric, and I don't find it coincidental. Let's put it that way. So another thing is, what constitutes a god, in your opinion, when they're looking at these deities as gods themselves? What makes them stand out as gods, in your opinion?
Well, I think humanity was and still is in a place where they feel the need for a powerful source to intervene in in their lives in order to protect them, that they that we created the gods to explain a lot of, you know, we explain, well, come on, Prometheus and fire, you know, giving fire mm-hmm. to the humans.
Right, technology, you know, though, yeah.
You know, I mean, lightning struck and there was fire, but the myth came down, you know, they created the myth that this god brought fire down and gave it to humanity, and that's how we learned how to cook our meat and warm our hands in the cold winter nights. So, and even today, people, and I'm not, there's nothing wrong with religion. If you are a practitioner of any religion, that and it gives you solace and it gives you comfort and it gives you joy, then that's where you belong, and that's very appropriate. I just have a different truth, and my truth is that you know, we have a part of God inside of us, and we don't need to reach outside of us, and that we charted our lives, we planned on having experiences, and you know, we weren't thrust into bad situations or difficult situations by some god or whatever. I mean, it's ludicrous.
Mm-hmm.
Our spirit requested information, you know, experiences in the physical realm so that it could enhance itself on an etheric level, and that's what we got, and that's what we're dealing with. And
mm-hmm.
you know, nothing has been imposed upon us. I mean, you know, you've had some really amazing experiences that were not pleasurable, but they made you the person you are, which is, you know, a cool person, and you wouldn't want to change
yeah.
that. So
I was kicked and dragged into something.
Yeah.
No, it's true.
Yeah.
You transmute alchemically. But you know what? The God idea is, in my opinion, we are all gods, extension of creators, source, co-creators. But, you know, when someone shows you technology, like another country, for example, has better technology than we do, we wouldn't consider them gods of today. We'd say they're advanced. And in my opinion, back in the day, if people were impressed by something they didn't understand, whether it was a species, a off planet, or some technology, that they would assume they were gods, and maybe they weren't. So that was my point also. And I find that, yeah, we're all divine beings. And then I'm looking at, when you're talking, because I agree with you, Barbara, but I'm looking at this like, we should just clean the slate. I mean, just wipe it out, like all these equations that don't add up. You know, it's like this big chalkboard with a bunch of writing that doesn't have any value. And also we're like, we'll just erase it and just start into the void again. I'm not saying we're starting over, but it seems like we are going through a void and we are moving on in consciousness and evolution, and everything that we used to think was something tangible doesn't seem like it's tangible at all. And even this book, which I find fascinating, and I love his work, don't get me wrong, but as we were discussing, it's like, you know, it just feels, it doesn't feel like, the word tangible is the only thing I can think of right now. It just doesn't feel like it's solid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the more I read of this material, the more I sit back and I take a look, and when you look at us as primitive and you know, take us back 500 years to a time when we were more primitive, you know, we wanted something to believe in that was going to help us get through a difficult time or a difficult situation, and while we didn't realize that we had the power within us to change situations. I mean, my God, you create your reality by your perspective of it. If you don't like what's mm-hmm. going on, change it or move on to another place or time or whatever. But there was a time when people were really locked in their life pathway, and there was nothing they could do about it. So it gave them solace to be able to go to church, go to synagogue, and pray to a God, and ask for intervention, and ask for help, and ask for understanding, and you know, that was appropriate for that time. I don't see it as serving mm-hmm. the same purpose now that once it did.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, it's really about stepping up, in my opinion, on a lot of different levels. And the more, like I said, I know I keep going over to the celestial bodies, but to me they're really reaching out energetically in a sense. I find that even these deities they're talking about are really representations of planets and planetary systems and consciousness within that celestial design, like the intelligence of this world, so to speak, and then the intelligence of another planet. It seemed like it would be something they would worship. And I find that everything that they wrote about is a mirror image of what's above our heads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, when you don't understand something, you do tend to, quote-unquote, worship it.
Yeah.
And
I don't really, I don't know about you, but I'm not big on all that. I believe in, I don't worship anything. I really don't. So,
there was a time.
I believe in co-creation.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, there was a time when I was much younger that I did. And then I began to say, well, you know, at one point I became a Catholic, and it was like, and then I got resentful that I had to go to someone to intervene between me and God, because mm-hmm. I preferred to go direct, you know.
Right.
And
yeah.
And so, it's you know, there was a time we were primitive, where those stories gave us understanding and comfort about things we did not understand.
Right.
And there are still things today that I don't understand. I don't understand war. I don't understand hatred. I don't understand pandemics. I don't understand a lot of things. I'm not worshiping them, but you know, it's sort of like, why do we do these things to us? And
exactly.
I mean, this book just kind of, you know, if we're experiencing tragedy, it's something that we need to experience and embrace and understand and take in and then move forward, not get stuck in the wallowing in the sadness, but move on.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people get stuck there, and
they are stuck. It's like a looping program. They just don't know how to get out of it.
Yeah,
a lot of people.
And
but I agree.
You know that old adage. You know, for those who don't pay attention to history, we are doomed to repeat it. And I think we're repeating history now.
Exactly. Yeah, it almost feels like we did an inversion on a timeline. Yeah. And I'm a timeline mm-hmm. jumper. I don't like that. I don't like going backwards at all. That's not for me. But I find that they're spiraling into this really weird void. Yeah.
And it's kind of like, been there, done that. What am I doing here again?
I know. See, this is why I'm done. I'm here, but I'm like, oh, I'm not coming back to this scenario. But it's too bad because, you know, it doesn't have to be this way. And you and I both know that. It doesn't have to be like this. It didn't have to be with that hatred and all this craziness that's going on. There's no real purpose. You're right about the wars and this and that. It's really not relative. I don't know why they think they need to orchestrate something like this, but I think it's force of habit. I think that they're so indoctrinated and programmed on such a primordial level that that's all they're going to keep doing. And it's like, well, this isn't working. So something has
well,
to give, and I think
also,
it is on a cosmic scale.
Isn't it also, you know, sort of, it's not only habit, but it's power. And it's
mm-hmm.
it's instead of looking for wisdom as something that's precious that enhances you, they're looking for power to manipulate other people, and
mm-hmm.
and you know there are a lot of those power grabbers out there, and we've created egregores out of big corporations. They've taken
mm-hmm.
on a life of their own, and I think we've even declared that they could be treated as a human being, which is terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're the new gods, kind of like the electronic gods or what do you want to call them, corporate gods. But yeah,
yeah.
An illusion of. But
yeah,
you're right; they seek power. Yeah.
And it's sort of like, it's sort of like, you know, I think as humans we've forgotten why we're here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, yes, we have to survive. Yes, we have to have a place to live and clothes on our backs and food in our bellies. But the purpose of being here is to grow, and we do that with love. We don't do it with, you know, a credit card. We don't do it with a checkbook. And the element of interacting with other people and experiencing love and sharing and generosity and not sacrifice, because sacrifice is a scary thing, because sacrifice can turn to a cancer eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But it depends on how you sacrifice and why you sacrifice. I mean, there are times sacrifice is a very noble thing. But many people get caught up in being the sacrificial lamb and mm-hmm. never grow beyond it. So it's a matter of, you know, I think people are forgetting why we're here. We're here mm-hmm. as a group, as a family, and we don't treat ourselves, each other, as family.
Not at all. Not even spiritual brothers or sisters or cosmic brothers and sisters, you know, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, I agree. But that's all social engineering and programming, in my opinion, also. But at some point, you understand the programming and you get out of it. I mean, I know beings like us do. We kind of wake up out of that scenario. And I don't see much of that going on here. But it does feel like the whole world has been encapsulated into a void. And it feels like it's being pulled away and ripped away from creation, you know. So that's very sad. Not that we're ripped away, but it just feels like people are being ripped away, whether they choose to or not, I don't know. And another thing is the myth of the dying God. I mean, we're all Godhead beings. We're all the ascended master within, even when, you know, we don't realize it. And I find that we are that, too. We're kind of like the dying gods on a world that's kind of gone in a different orbit, so to speak. I mean, I don't want to sound grim, but it does seem like that sometimes.
Well, it does, and yet, you know, all of these different gods throughout the thousands of years, you know, they died or were sacrificed or executed or whatever, and then 3 days later they rose. And I find that to me was fascinating. The journey that Jesus took has been replicated any number. I mean, there are 5 or 6 different times that you know, they take you through different generations of human evolution to say, you know, this is the story of this god. I mean, you know, Osiris and Horus and, mm-hmm. you know, the resurrecting of Horus and into Osiris. I keep getting those guys mixed up. But you know, that
it's
story.
It's yeah.
Yeah. And it's so many of them are so similar to mm-hmm. to the story of Jesus that it does make one ponder, because, of course, those stories are out there as well as legends and myths, and then suddenly you have Jesus and you know, and people take it verbatim, and to a degree I understand that, but to another degree, you know, it's, were they creating a religion out of a philosophy that was a wonderful philosophy? When you get right down to it, all of the major religions are based on the golden rule.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
You know, if you just take the simplicity of that and live by that, you've got your golden. But they built upon it, expanded it, and then started to make rules and create dogma and then separated humanity into different groups. Instead of mm-hmm. saying, hey, you're one group, you're one family, you're all the same, and then one group decides they're better than the other, so one group says that we are the chosen, you're not. And, you know, and then suddenly there's war over it all. So
mm-hmm.
Not really sure how that happened, because we
yeah.
all started
well, I think
as
right.
one family.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's that whole thing about controlling and manipulating, having an agenda behind under the guise of religion, I mean, or anything else. But, you know, that whole sequencing connected to, yeah, the ancient mystery schools and the story of Christ, I mean, it does. It mirrors and dovetails right into the Egyptian mystery schools. And with that comes, and I've talked about the transfiguration of the Adam, because in my opinion, the whole idea behind Jesus and the resurrection of Jesus was the transfiguration of the Adam, which means through initiation and through spirituality and light body Merkaba, he was transmuted alchemically. And that's what we go through in the process of evolution and consciousness, is that's what brings us to the immortality area where we can phase shift, bilocate, become the immortal, you know, bodhisattva types. I mean, that's me. That's what I see. But, you know, people are saying that the more physical aspect of the, you know, this dying on the cross, et cetera, and then being reborn. So And another thing that comes to mind when you mentioned the threes, I mean, what do you think about the threes? Why is it always 3 days? Why is that number there, in your opinion? Because it is a Trinity frequency number.
Yeah, and it's out there. I mean, three wise men and the 3 days. I think there's something else about 3 months someplace, too. Well, it's a Trinity.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the Christian and the Catholic Church, you know, decided to luck onto that one. And it's sort of like, you know, you have a term that applies to something perfectly, and then everybody uses it, and it becomes hackneyed. And
right.
it no longer has the same power and flavor, and it loses its impact when everybody
yep.
is using it. It's like light worker, light bearer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of those terms, 40 years ago, 30 years ago, you know, they were new, and you know, there weren't a lot of light workers out there, and now everybody's
mm-hmm.
a light worker.
I agree. It's been hijacked. Yeah, it's been co-opted.
Yeah.
And it's been everywhere. It's been co-opted, not just the New Age community, but religions, symbols, every symbol you can possibly imagine has been hijacked. So that the frequency has changed. It's not the same. It's not as pure. It's like King Arthur drawing the sword from the stone. I mean, there's a very uniqueness to what you were describing. And I find that certain beings are just more, I don't want to say they're more advanced, but maybe they've done more work. They shine brighter and they do a lot more versus some of the people that are just hopping on the bandwagon.
Yeah, that's true. And it's kind of like, you know, when you use a term to describe yourself and then suddenly everybody is using the same term, it's like, oh my gosh, I've got to find another term now. So lately I've become a... Are you?
Are
oh, okay.
You?
I'm a bridge walker. I'm a bridge walker.
I love that, though. I think
I stay in the middle of the bridge between this world and the next.
That's beautiful. And watch, let's hope nobody else, you know, copies that one. Yeah, I heard it here first, Barbara, so I'll know. And I'll make sure I start hearing that again.
Well,
but it's true. It is, and especially on the Internet, because it's monkey see, monkey do. And as soon as they hear it on the radio or they hear it on an interview, they start running with it. I mean, I've seen that before over and over again. Even stories, even information, you know, they copy and paste. And, you know, it's just, that's too bad in a weird way that people have to do that. But I don't know why they do it.
Well, you know, it's true. And there is, I think it's so confusing because there really is nothing new. And you know, every now and then, I came up a long time ago with a phrase that I thought was wonderful, and I was going to make bumper stickers, and I was sure I had invented it, and it was, when in doubt, don't.
Oh, I like that.
And me too. And I really, you know, I said, you know, I don't know where it came from, but I'm going to claim it because I don't know where it belongs. Well, I found out where it belonged, and the first person to use it was Benjamin Franklin.
Is that right? Wow.
Yes.
Any relatives?
I don't know. Maybe I'm him reinvented. Who knows?
Well,
but,
or maybe one of your ancestors. Who knows? You know, but it's interesting you have tapped into the database.
I mean, it just, to me, was so fabulous. And what was the other one that I'm pretty sure is mine, but now I'm not so sure about anything that comes out of me. And that's logic and reason does not apply. We live in times
like
when
too.
Logic and reason does not apply. But
I should have heard that elsewhere.
Well, you know, at one point I was cleaning up some of the stuff on my website, and I thought I would send it through one of those checkers to make sure that it wasn't, you know, I hadn't in some way pilfered someone else's words or works. And everything I put through said, oh, no, this is plagiarized, this is plagiarized, this is plagiarized. And when
I knew I had written it.
No, well, when I knew I had written it and it came back
mm-hmm.
plagiarized, I realized they were checking me out against my own website. So, of course, it came back plagiarized.
Oh, brother. I would never trust anything like that, those programs at all. And I know my work, too, because, I mean, plus I've copywritten it, but I know my real work. Because, you know, we all have a different way of communicating and an original formula that we use, terminology, whatever, and it seems like it's very unique onto the individual, especially when we're writing. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I've noticed that anyway.
But it's sort of like, you know, there is a cosmic consciousness, there is a group consciousness, and if you are able to sort of let information flow through you, then you know, amazing things happen. I mean, you write poetry, mm-hmm. you become, you know, a gifted author. You know, there's a lot of magic that can happen the more that you trust to yourself and open yourself up to that higher consciousness that is cosmic and can mm-hmm. can create magic in your life. There's just no doubt about it. And I think
yeah, it's
so
a very
many,
interactive world. Go ahead.
Well, and so many people just don't trust it. You know, it's like, oh, that's not me. I couldn't possibly have written that. And I've hit a couple of those times, you know, in cleaning up stuff. I found one article that I called my friend Jeannie, and I said, this is really pretty. I'm going to put it on the website, but I'm not sure who wrote it. And I read it to her, and she said, you wrote that 10 years ago. And,
well,
you know, it was it was like, oh, well, it was good then, it's good now. But, you know, it just sometimes, you know, you write so much, you just can't keep track of everything that you've written. You, of course, have
That's
written
so true.
Great books.
Well, thank
I mean,
you.
I used
to write a lot of poetry, too. Yeah.
Why don't you still do it?
Oh, no, this was back in when I was younger. I used to write poetry when I was in my teens, and then I don't know, in my 20s. I have a book of poetry I think I'm going to publish, but, yeah, and if you look at it and read it, it's absolutely beautiful. It's stunning. And I thought that's one of those things where I'm like, wow, I can't believe I wrote that. But it wasn't – I was streaming it. Obviously, it was me, an aspect of me. But my point is that can you recreate those now? I don't think I can, you know. That's just stuff that's magic in motion when you start writing that kind of stuff, that kind of poetry. But I wrote about Atlantis and other worlds and all kinds of cool stuff. And like we were talking earlier, my version of Atlantis is more celestial. It's cosmic. It has nothing to do with what people have described in these books. Not that these books, you know, they're what they are, but it's interesting how we all have a different benchmark of what we see and what we interpolate.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, for me, I'm going to put Atlantis in the same categories as the Garden of Eden, as Loredel, as Ashtar, as Shambhala, as, you know, all of these mystical places that you know, we're supposed to, and like you said, I think it's more etheric. I think that it was a place that was representative of a level of consciousness and a way of life that would have been a wonderful blueprint for humanity had humanity decided to go that direction.
Right, and once again, we're right there right now.
Yeah. We certainly have the power to do it, and yet... Mm-hmm. There's so much anger and destruction, and I mean, I've not seen this much anger at different races, at different groups, ever before.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
In my lifetime, anyhow.
I
was born the very end of World War II, but you know, it's just. Rabbi Dasik said, you know, if you picture everyone you look at as having the face of God and treat them accordingly, it's going to be a beautiful world.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to read his book. His book, Radical Loving, is just fabulous, and he is a great interview.
I should check him out. I'll probably have him on my show. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's a
great. Well, he's right. He really is. But you know what it takes to get people to look at each other on that level? Not everybody can resonate with that, and it's unfortunate, and I'm not trying to poo-hoo it, but it really is, you know, certain people are just so programmed. I mean, my goodness, but you're seeing it on the timeline, but I'd like to see them step it up, you know, step up their consciousness. But it's going to take a higher frequency, and it's going to take them to take the initiative and get in there and move to that next level.
But, you know, the keys, the triggers are out there.
Mm-hmm.
And people who are planting those keys, I mean, look at John Lennon's Imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely,
right, yeah.
Definitely a trigger to say, to remind us of what we're capable of. And it's sad to see humanity spiraling the way it is now. And this last year and a half has been an amazing opportunity for people to rediscover their direction, their mission in life, who they are, what they want to do with their life, and a lot of people have. A lot of people have shifted and changed their focus. So it's good in that way, in that they took the time out and they used it creatively. And then there are those that haven't. I mean, I have noticed, maybe you have too, that anybody who wrote a book in the last year and a half, instead of writing a 300-page book, have written a 500 or 600-page book.
Oh, jeez. That wouldn't be me, though. But, yeah.
No. Gratefully, your books are very readable. They're very instructive. They're fabulous. And, of course, I love your transformation one, Ascension.
Your transmutation for Ascension. Thank you.
Yep. I have blatantly stolen it.
Well, that's okay.
You know, I don't take credit for it, but I do teach it. So, and for anybody who's interested in that kind of a process, it's a fabulous book. That and Mr. Moon and the Halloween Ball.
Oh, Mr. Sun and the Halloween Ball. Yeah.
Sun, yeah.
I love that book, too. You know, it's such a cute children's book. It really is. I'm not, like, conceited, but it's really dear to my heart. I'm such a child within sometimes, and I love that book. I'd love to put it in a little animation story.
It is beautifully written, and the illustrations are gorgeous.
They are cute. Thank you. Yeah, you did a good job at Oliver House.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a worthwhile read. I loved it. So
I love magic. Yeah, little moments. You know, they really bring kind of a little bit of joy to your heart. I mean, the things in life that bring us happiness, just those moments of just pure thought, pure energy, and just enlightenment. And even a children's book, I mean, something as simple as that, but it puts a smile on your face. And I don't want to miss out on those moments. I hope people don't forget how to have happiness or just a moment of, you know, letting go of this weird that's going on.
Oh, yeah. I think the when I moved from Connecticut to Nashville, I had huge gardens in Connecticut, and I don't here. I'm in a townhouse condo. But I do have a small space where I can, you know, do plantings, and I discovered I had no dirt. So I've got 30 or 40 pots out there with flowers in them. And, you know, it's a great way to garden because, you know, something dies, you put something else in that's blooming. It makes me smile. I go out there sometimes very late at night when it's acceptable heat wise, and I sit there and just look at all the flowers, and they make me smile. And I think everybody has certain things in their life, in their reality that make them smile and give them joy, and it's not stuff you buy with money. It's stuff you create with your own hands, or it's, you know, watching a sunset or sitting by a waterfall, or it's some of those experiences that cost no money at all but give you great joy. And boy, when you can have those and you know, have access to them so that you can sit and smile and just sit and chuckle about, you know, how cool life actually is, it creates magic in your life. And once you have the magic, boy, you got it made. Then you can create miracles. And they do happen.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That synchronicity, when it starts moving the energies of the cosmos, is really powerful. But, yeah, you know, life can be sure to be stuck in a rut. And even if we're dealing with a very challenging timeline, it's still, it's not going to come back to us again. I mean, we leave this world, you know, have a good life while you're here, or do the best you can to be as happy as you can, in my opinion, because it's going to be a whole different ballpark when you leave. It's not like you just get to hop back in another avatar body and come back here. So I think people should take that into perspective. I really do. And look a little bit more kindly on each other. I mean, I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm a warrior spirit, too. But my point is, there's too much drama. I mean, people are just chomping at the bit to bother each other, and that shouldn't be going on.
Yeah, it's Well, we're just coming out of a Mercury retrograde, too. So,
well, that's a good excuse.
Yeah, Mercury, you know, it just seems to go back.
Blame it on the planet.
Really. Well, why not? It does feel as though people are starting to communicate a little bit better now. But for a while there, it was like nobody understood anything. I gave a friend of mine, he asked for a telephone number for a place around where I am. And I sent him the telephone number, and he said, the number doesn't work. And I said, of course it works. I've called it. It works. No, it doesn't work. I said, are you sure you've dialed the right number? Yes, I've dialed the right number. It doesn't work. I'm telling you, it doesn't work. You gave me the wrong number. And I sat back and I thought, I know this number works because I called it. And So I took a breath and I said, did you happen to put a 1 in front of it? Because it is long distance from where you are. It was dead silence on the other end of the phone.
How funny. I know that people are making a lot of errors, too. Yeah, this past year, it could be the shutdown and all the weird and even wearing a mask. Who knows, because they're not getting enough oxygen. I don't know. But there was a lot more errors. I've noticed a lot more problems just with stuff purchasing online or this or that, just glitches that don't normally happen.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, I've noticed that more and more.
Well, life is taking a turn for sure, and I think, frankly, we've got a summer of turmoil ahead of us. It just feels like that there is so much anger out there, and for some reason, turmoil seems to grow in hot weather and humid weather.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I think you're right
so
about that.
I'm kind of sitting back and watching because it seems to me that there's a lot of angry people out there. And you know, this is a time frame where they express their anger physically. So, yeah, I'm staying out of big crowds. But
that's good.
We've kind of gotten off topic just a little bit.
Oh, I know. We do that sometimes. We took a journey someplace. That's okay.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I think that's what his book is designed
to
do, actually. Quite honestly, we go into this and then it's like, wait a second, because I didn't mean to divert, but I'm like, I kept seeing celestial bodies, and every time I read his work, or anybody else's for that matter, but it seems like we just went into another field of energy to discuss it on a different level.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you, and I think that that the planets have a great deal to do and with the gods and goddesses, and even as far as you've had Robert Sullivan on your show, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. I have. He's coming back on in October, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, months away.
Yeah, he does two analogies that I absolutely adore. And if you've never heard them, it's worth listening to. He does one with Jesus, Lamb of God, and he astrologically, you know, compares the whole thing, and he goes through the whole symbolism that is connected to the story of Jesus, and the other is Elvis Presley.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I do remember the Elvis Presley one.
You know, Sun Records, Memphis, Egypt, the whole thing.
Yep.
And he does that symbolically, and it's phenomenal. And his new book, he's incorporating a lot more of the astrological stuff into it.
Oh, cool.
So it really looks like the new book is going to be fabulous.
Are you
going to
have him on soon?
I'm going to have him on, and Mark's going to have him on. Mark's going to have him on before I do, because Mark had space and I didn't. So I think Robert is scheduled to come on in January. And
that's nice.
And I think for Mark, he's going to be on earlier. I don't have the calendar right in front of me, but yeah, he's going to be on Mark's show, and they're going to dig into a lot of the new material that he's using in getting the symbolism for the symbolism that is in the movies. Mm-hmm. And
The cinema symbolism is awesome. Yeah.
Okay. Wait a minute. Mark is obviously listening.
Hi, Mark.
August 12th is when he's going to have Robert Sullivan on.
Cool.
And so he's, looking very much forward to Mark's show and mine because we interview differently. So we'll get into different. I think Robert's new book is one that you could probably do two or three shows on because, first of all, it's a big book. And and he takes different approaches to things in the new book. So I'm looking forward to it, actually.
Yeah, he's a very good decoder. He's really, really good at what he does. Yep. Especially with cinema symbolism, all those movies, he was, his assessment was pretty interesting.
I've requested two movies. Yeah, I have. The Matrix is one of the ones in the new book. I have asked him to do two movies that he hasn't done yet, which I'm really sad about. One is Avatar, and the other is Interstellar.
That would be good.
Both of which have symbolism like crazy in them. But he has to buy the movie and he has to watch it 20 or 30 times.
I know, I couldn't do that. I mean, some movies I like. But I don't know if I can sit there that long. I guess I'll get paid to do what I would.
I can lip sync a couple of movies: Mamma Mia, The Sword and the Stone. As far as looking for symbolism, not so much. They're just happy movies that I just adore, and I can watch them endlessly. But, what was the other one? 1776.
Mm-hmm.
That musical. I just adore. 1776. There is so much symbolism in our past that I don't think we even recognize. And we've got goddesses on top of buildings in Washington D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make sense, and yet there they are. And we've got the obelisks in major cities.
Right.
Central Park.
Transmitters.
There have been incorporated into our society symbols of antiquity that many people don't even understand what they mean.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I think one of the things that Manly P. Hall's book helps to do is to point out a lot of these symbolisms come from way back in antiquity, and they represent something that is almost a symbol that stands for the same thing, an archetype. So that we have these archetypes that are there, and I mean, once you have gone through one of Robert's books, you'll never look at a movie the same way again, because you'll be a part of you is subconsciously looking for where are the archetypes, what's going on, what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I know what to expect because I've identified some of the archetypes, and I know what their behavior is going to represent. So.
Right.
It gives you a greater depth of perception and understanding of your life and your reality. And if you understand the astrological stuff, the gods and the goddesses, I mean, that's all over the place. I mean, look at Starbucks.
I know. It's one big encryption. Everywhere it's encoded. It's very interesting. It's just like a big formula. If you look at the whole scenery, it's like a playbook. And if you read it right, you can really ride the streams and then decode. And he's able to do that on so many different levels. But even the numbers, think about, we were discussing this the other day about the 20, like the 11-11 numbers that pop up, or the 333s or the 222s or whatever it is. I don't know if you had that same thing happening where all of a sudden you're seeing these numbers popping up on your clocks. But I've had a lot of people telling me, they're getting that a lot. And it's not a coincidence, in my opinion, at all. once again, they're plugged into something. It's almost like a simulation, but the idea behind it is, why does that message keep popping up? Why are those numbers keep showing themselves, and what is the message behind it?
Well, yeah, and you know, where do you go for the information?
Right. Well, I go to my numerology, but my gnosis, but most people wouldn't know. I mean, and look at Robert Sullivan. He has a different interpolation of the data, too. So I guess it depends on where you walk here on the timeline. But I find it to be something that it's singing, unless they've asked for an answer or they're, you're trying to get a message from something. I think that's the message. Those numbers are talking.
Oh, absolutely. Lynn Buss wrote a wonderful book called The Heart of Numerology, and I think that's the title of his website, too, and he's got a calculator on there, so all you have to do is put your name in, and he has all the information on what the different numbers mean there as well. And it's just, it's amazing. Confirmation.
Wow. What's
that? Where
that
came from? I don't know.
Wasn't that weird? That's from you.
It wasn't here either.
Really? Oh, how funny. It wasn't coming from me. That's over there. Well, wow.
Let's check.
Very interesting.
Let's check on numerology.
I guess so. Well, I do numerology,
wow.
But yeah. But it definitely has a value, no doubt about it. But when people are starting to plug into the sequencing of clocks and, you know, all of a sudden it's just showing itself so often, you have to ask, what's up?
Yeah, and you know, it's funny if, you know, I certainly, you know, everybody gets to a point in time where they want an answer. You know, they want a sign, they want a symbol, they want something. And, you know, it's always there. That synchronicity always comes. It's just a matter of being quiet enough to quiet your mind enough to be observant and to read the symbols that are coming your way, whether it's, you know, the other night I was sitting on my back deck, front deck, I don't know, one of my decks, and it was, you know, it was quiet, it was still, it was, you know, it was just very peaceful, and it was like, you know, all right, you know, I need a sign for this particular issue I was working on. It was kind of like, you know, don't want a burning bush because I don't want the fire department here, but, you know, a trumpet sound, you know, just something, you know, subtle that you know, I can understand is definitely a sign of you heard me anyhow, whether or not I'm going to get what I want is a whole other ball of wax, but just, did you hear me? And I have these huge chimes on my deck there. Huge. It takes quite a breeze to get them to, you know, they're very mellow sounding. And there wasn't a breath of air anywhere. And one of them started to chime.
Wow. Nice.
And it was like, absolutely. And right next to it was the other one, and the other one wasn't chiming. And the flowers weren't moving or, you know, nothing was fluttering, and suddenly this thing is chiming away, and it was like, okay, so you heard me. Now the question is,
very nice.
Do I get my way?
You know? I would say a yes on that one. But it's so interactive. That's the beauty of what we're dealing with this fabric. Everything is so interactive in consciousness. It really is. It seems like it's excuse me, more amplified now than ever when it comes down to the art of manifestation. It's very quick.
But you have to be perceptive enough to pay attention and discerning. And
yeah.
I think, you know, we all get synchronicities sent to us constantly, and it's a matter of, are you paying attention? Are you going through something in your life that is difficult, and are you suddenly seeing sitcoms representing the same situation? Or are you reading a book that refers to the same situation that's going on in your life? Are you getting a message of how to respond to that situation from an outside source, which you're pulling to yourself? You know, it's kind of like, I don't trust myself enough to just take my inner feelings. I want to get an outer representation of an answer. And you get it. It comes. It's there. But you have to be able to sit back and be quiet and observe and listen. And, you know, oftentimes a song on the radio, will, the words will absolutely address a question you've been mulling over in your head. And it's, you know, there's so many different ways that that can happen, whether it's something on television, whether it's an email you get from somebody that, you know, you haven't heard from in a long time, whether it's, I don't know, skywriting. I mean, it can take the form of so many different messengers. And, and, you know, it's there. But being discerning, being able to quiet yourself, to quiet your mind, to just listen to what's going on around you, and then get the message and then act upon it appropriately.
Right.
And the cool thing the cool thing is that there's no wrong way to answer one of those messages. It's, you know, whatever you do is right.
Yeah, I agree. I think that most people are just so damn, well, I shouldn't say damn, they're mostly so distracted that they just don't pay attention to those messages. Some of them are very, very subtle. I do know recently I've been noticing a lot more energy in the field at night when I'm outside. So I was mentioning this the other day that my vision, my psychic vision and a multidimensional sight, whatever you want to call it, is more ramped up now than ever when it comes down to just seeing energy. So that's definitely been going on.
Oh, yeah.
For what it's worth.
There have been downloads happening all over the place. And you know, a lot of people are finding themselves very tired, where normally they didn't, you know, they weren't tired. And lots of times that comes from having the downloads being incorporated into your consciousness while you're supposed to be sleeping. And sometimes you're working harder when you're sleeping than when you are awake. But I think being kind to yourself and understanding that these are times where there's change going on. And when there's change going on, it's really important that you take care of yourself and you take your vitamins and you get your sleep and you don't overwhelm yourself with worry or fear. And, you know, there's really nothing to fear. Life is meant to be experienced, not to be frightened of. And
I agree. Yeah. That's a big block for a lot of people, too.
It's sort of like, oh, my gosh, you know, what do I do now? Well, you just keep going.
Sometimes I just let go of the wheel. You drive now.
I don't know. I like to steer every now and then, but I always hit a brick wall.
Navigate through some portals.
Yeah, every now and then it's like, okay, I know what you want me to do. I've got it. I'll take it from here for a while. And I hear laughter and door slamming. It's kind of like anybody that's been helping me on the other side has gone out to play golf, and they'll help me pick up the pieces later. And it's inevitable I will screw up and you know, pick up the pieces and say, okay, so maybe I wasn't quite right, but I was close. You know, but
are you still doing your write-ups? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, for every month?
What you're seeing? Go ahead, yeah. I don't mean to walk on you. Go ahead.
You mean the predictions?
Yes.
I did an overview for 2021. I haven't been doing the monthly ones because it didn't feel right. I will start doing them monthly again probably next year. It just felt like that humanity was going through such changes and there was so much going on. I would just do the yearly one, and the year, it covered the whole year. Yeah, and it's up on the website. And but you know, we seem to have been caught in a rut, and, you know, I hated to say the same thing over and over and over again.
No, that's good. But I look forward to those. I like those. You do a good job of those, so look forward to the next one.
Yeah, well,
I think you're right about summer.
Summer is going to be a fascinating time. We're going to see things coming out of the woodwork that we don't expect. We're going to see shifts and changes in many different levels of government and the possibility of some of the states changing their boundaries.
Well, that would be interesting. Well, that sounds almost positive, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's all positive unless you happen to not want change, and then you're in trouble.
Well, make friends with change, as they say. I still look at Yellowstone. I don't know why. I've been kind of honing in on that. Obviously it's got its own record of what it wants to do, but it seems to me like that's something I'm keeping an eye on.
My eye is on the New Madrid fault line. Now that I'm in the middle of it.
Oh, right. Well, you have your radar. You'll know.
I swear it's going to go off again. I'm sure it is. And I keep predicting it every year so that it doesn't. And the year that I don't predict it going off, I guarantee it'll go. So.
Oh, my goodness. What does that mean for you? You have to move again, then.
No, I'll just have a lot of broken crystal. I'm pretty sure that I won't have waterfront property, but I might, come to think of it. I have some pretty big rivers here, but no, I don't think so. But I if an earthquake hit, the things that hit here are more tornadoes than earthquakes, so I feel pretty safe.
Mm-hmm.
But the New Madrid line, I'm sure, is going to go off again. It's overdue, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. So just notice the time. We are coming to an end here. Want to let people know where your website is and where your other radio shows are?
Oh, sure. Well, thank you, Barbara. This has been a wonderful show, as always. And I want to thank everybody for listening. And, my website's Night Shadow Anomaly Detectives. You can find my radio shows over there on Hyperspace of the KCUR Digital Radio Network, in the archive section. And I'm also on Raven Star's Witching Hour on Revolution Radio. At Freedom Slips, you can find archives there as well.
And both those shows are great. Freedom Slips has a brand new chat room, which is, I'm not sure they actually listen to any of the shows, but it's a very active chat room.
Oh, I know. I don't know if they do either. There's all kinds of conversation going on. It's like a little virtual bar, I guess. I don't know.
I know a long time ago, well, in 2009 when I started Nightlight, the chat rooms were very, very active, and I can remember watching some great recipes being shared during the show from time to time.
That's funny.
Yeah. So,
Well, I'm glad you're doing today. This. This is great.
Nightlight has certainly evolved into, I think what I had hoped it would evolve into, and that's becoming a light in the darkness and confusion of evolution. So that it is a nightlight. It's a place of brightness. It's a place of light. And hopefully it can be a place where people can, help to find their direction and trot off in the proper one for them. But, this has been a great evening. I've thoroughly enjoyed this chat. And we will be back again the last Sunday in July, and choose another subject that we will divert from.
Exactly, no kidding.
But
yeah, we went through another universe tonight.
Thanks so much for being here once a month. It's such a joy to talk with you, and I'm so delighted to have Neon Twilight on Nightlight.
Well, thank you. I'm honored to be here, and I just love your work and respect you, so thank you for having me. It's fun. Enjoy you, too. I love having you on with the show. It's great.
It is fun. It is fun. So I will wish you good night. I will wish everybody out there good night. And have a safe one. Have a good one. Remember to have joy in your heart and laughter on your tongue, and your perception turned way to high so that you have magic happening in your life at all times. Good night, everybody.